Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań, sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania do tekstu pierwszego.
Text 1.
Recent studies show that office workers spend almost a third of their workday reading and responding to electronic mail. In today's digital world, we're often expected to be reachable by email or social media at all times. This is simply stressful, and it may be bad for our health. So why are we allowing this unsatisfactory situation to continue? Well, apparently, many of us are addicted. Checking email activates a primal impulse in our brains to seek out what behavioral psychologists call random rewards. Imagine your email inbox as a slot machine. Most of the time when we pull the lever to check our messages, we get something bothersome, a complaint from a client or another task from our boss. But every once in a while we get something that brings a smile to our face, such as a note from a friend or a funny video. It's those random rewards that we find so addictive. However, those messages which cheer us up may not be the only reason for checking our email so often. Many of us feel anxious when our inboxes are packed, so we try to answer as many emails as possible immediately. But an empty inbox is an ideal that can rarely be achieved. Just when you think you've replied to the last message, ping, a new one rolls in. So we must adopt a more realistic approach. Just like in many other areas of life, we have to choose what to deal with and what to ignore. When we try to do too many things at the same time, we only end up feeling frustrated. To survive, we must set priorities.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Recent studies show that office workers spend almost a third of their workday reading and responding to electronic mail. In today's digital world, we're often expected to be reachable by email or social media at all times. This is simply stressful, and it may be bad for our health. So why are we allowing this unsatisfactory situation to continue? Well, apparently, many of us are addicted. Checking email activates a primal impulse in our brains to seek out what behavioral psychologists call random rewards. Imagine your email inbox as a slot machine. Most of the time when we pull the lever to check our messages, we get something bothersome, a complaint from a client or another task from our boss. But every once in a while we get something that brings a smile to our face, such as a note from a friend or a funny video. It's those random rewards that we find so addictive. However, those messages which cheer us up may not be the only reason for checking our email so often. Many of us feel anxious when our inboxes are packed, so we try to answer as many emails as possible immediately. But an empty inbox is an ideal that can rarely be achieved. Just when you think you've replied to the last message, ping, a new one rolls in. So we must adopt a more realistic approach. Just like in many other areas of life, we have to choose what to deal with and what to ignore. When we try to do too many things at the same time, we only end up feeling frustrated. To survive, we must set priorities.
Zapoznaj się z treścią zadania do tekstu drugiego.
Text 2.
Today I'm pleased to have the British astronaut, Major Timothy Peake, here in the studio to talk about his time in space. Tim, did you always want to be an astronaut?
When I was young, I knew I wanted to be a pilot. But I never imagined I would be an astronaut. My father had always been interested in aviation, so from an early age, I used to go to air shows with him. That's when my fascination with flying began. After leaving school, I went to the Royal Military Academy in Sandhurst, and I graduated in 1992. Later that same year, I got my pilot's license and started flying army helicopters.
How did it happen that you became an astronaut?
Well, one day I saw an online advertisement for the European Space Agency. They were looking for people to work on their space missions, and I decided to apply. As well as being an experienced pilot, I also had a university degree and I was healthy and in shape, so I met the main criteria and was admitted to the astronaut training program.
This was in 2009, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. And I was really lucky. About 8,000 people applied for just 6 places.
In 2015, you took part in a space mission. Please tell us about it.
For 6 months, my job was to run important experiments on board the International Space Station, for example, on the Earth's climate. Researchers also carried out tests on me. For instance, they studied my sleep patterns to learn how humans adapt to life without normal daylight. I think the highlight for me was when I went on a spacewalk to repair the station's power supply.
It's difficult to imagine the intensity of the experience. Can you describe it?
It was incredible. Of course, there was a lot of nervousness beforehand. I was constantly going up to the window and trying to visualize myself performing my assigned tasks in space. You've got to have a lot of concentration so as not to make a mistake, because the scope for human error is enormous. Just before leaving the spaceship, I started to have serious doubts, but it was too late to back out. But when I finally found myself in space, I saw the universe stretching out to infinity and the Earth passing by beneath. I felt ready for the adventure.
Fantastic. Well, Tim, thank you for telling us about your amazing experience.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Today I'm pleased to have the British astronaut, Major Timothy Peake, here in the studio to talk about his time in space. Tim, did you always want to be an astronaut?
When I was young, I knew I wanted to be a pilot. But I never imagined I would be an astronaut. My father had always been interested in aviation, so from an early age, I used to go to air shows with him. That's when my fascination with flying began. After leaving school, I went to the Royal Military Academy in Sandhurst, and I graduated in 1992. Later that same year, I got my pilot's license and started flying army helicopters.
How did it happen that you became an astronaut?
Well, one day I saw an online advertisement for the European Space Agency. They were looking for people to work on their space missions, and I decided to apply. As well as being an experienced pilot, I also had a university degree, and I was healthy and in shape. So I met the main criteria and was admitted to the astronaut training program.
This was in 2009, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. And I was really lucky. About 8,000 people applied for just 6 places.
In 2015, you took part in a space mission. Please tell us about it.
For 6 months, my job was to run important experiments on board the International Space Station. For example, on the Earth's climate. Researchers also carried out tests on me. For instance, they studied my sleep patterns to learn how humans adapt to life without normal daylight. I think the highlight for me was when I went on a spacewalk to repair the station's power supply.
It's difficult to imagine the intensity of the experience. Can you describe it?
It was incredible. Of course, there was a lot of nervousness beforehand. I was constantly going up to the window and trying to visualize myself performing my assigned tasks in space. You've got to have a lot of concentration so as not to make a mistake, because the scope for human error is enormous. Just before leaving the spaceship, I started to have serious doubts, but it was too late to back out. But when I finally found myself in space, I saw the universe stretching out to infinity and the Earth passing by beneath. I felt ready for the adventure.
Fantastic. Well, Tim, thank you for telling us about your amazing experience.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One.
I was walking through the town centre with some friends when we saw a long queue outside a bank. It turned out the cash machine was paying out double money. A bank employee had accidentally loaded the £10 tray of the machine with £20 notes. This meant that customers received £600 when they requested the maximum permitted amount of £300. My friends were eager to join the queue and they got me to wait in line with them. But to me, it felt wrong, even though I thought we wouldn't be breaking the law. Fortunately, just as it was our turn, the machine was shut down. I was so relieved.
Two. I went to my back garden to pick some broccoli for my dinner when I discovered something in the vegetable patch hidden between the cauliflowers. It was a bag full of £20 notes. I showed it to my wife. There was £1,000 altogether. I was unemployed at the time, and the idea of keeping the money was tempting. But then I started to think that it might have come from a burglary, so I called the police. They are now investigating the matter, and if they can't trace the origin of the money, there's a chance that I might be able to keep it. So keep your fingers crossed. Three.
How would you feel if you won the lottery but didn't get any money? That's what happened to me. Every week I purchase a lottery ticket with the same numbers at the same store. When I saw that all my numbers had come up, I was thrilled. There was just one problem. The winning ticket was in the pocket of some trousers that I had just washed, so it was completely unreadable. The shop has CCTV and the video clearly shows me buying a ticket that day, but a spokesperson for the lottery company says that I need to show more proof to support my claim. What other proof do they need? I have decided to hire a lawyer to help me get my winnings.
Four. My worst decision was allowing my sister to clear out the attic of our parents' home on her own. She ignored my request not to touch the old wooden toy box that used to belong to me as a child. The box was where I had stored my original Star Wars toys that dated back to the 1970s. The toys were in excellent condition and still in their original packaging too. My sister thought they were just junk and threw them out. I almost cried when I looked online and found out that a Luke Skywalker action figure from 1978 had recently sold for $25,000 at an auction. Five.
I'm an IT worker. And in 2013, I thought it was wise to buy a large amount of cryptocurrency, which turned out to be the right decision because its value has risen spectacularly since then. There's just one problem. Last month, I accidentally threw out the hard drive on which the cryptocurrency's access key was stored. I'm waiting for permission from the local authorities to search the landfill site where it's buried. I have no intention of giving up.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1.
I was walking through the town centre with some friends when we saw a long queue outside a bank. It turned out the cash machine was paying out double money. A bank employee had accidentally loaded the £10 tray of the machine with £20 notes. This meant that customers received £600 when they requested the maximum permitted amount of £300. My friends were eager to join the queue, and they got me to wait in line with them. But to me, it felt wrong, even though I thought we wouldn't be breaking the law. Fortunately, just as it was our turn, the machine was shut down. I was so relieved.
Two. I went to my back garden to pick some broccoli for my dinner when I discovered something in the vegetable patch hidden between the cauliflowers. It was a bag full of £20 notes. I showed it to my wife. There was £1,000 altogether. I was unemployed at the time, and the idea of keeping the money was tempting. But then I started to think that it might have come from a burglary, so so I called the police. They are now investigating the matter, and if they can't trace the origin of the money, there's a chance that I might be able to keep it. So keep your fingers crossed. Three.
How would you feel if you won the lottery but didn't get any money? That's what happened to me. Every week I purchase a lottery ticket with the same numbers at the same store. When I saw that all my numbers had come up, I was thrilled. There was just one problem. The winning ticket was in the pocket of some trousers that I had just washed, so it was completely unreadable. The shop has CCTV and the video clearly shows me buying a ticket that day, but a spokesperson for the lottery company says that I need to show more proof to support my claim. What other proof do they need? I have decided to hire a lawyer to help me get my winnings.
Four. My worst decision was allowing my sister to clear out the attic of our parents' home on her own. She ignored my request not to touch the old wooden toy box that used to belong to me as a child. The box was where I had stored my original Star Wars toys that dated back to the 1970s. The toys were in excellent condition and still in their original packaging too. My sister thought they were just junk and threw them out. I almost cried when I looked online and found out that a Luke Skywalker action figure from 1978 had recently sold for $25,000 at an auction. Five.
I'm an IT worker. And in 2013, I thought it was wise to buy a large amount of cryptocurrency, which turned out to be the right decision because its value has risen spectacularly since then. There's just one problem. Last month, I accidentally threw out the hard drive on which the cryptocurrency's access key was stored. I'm waiting for permission from the local authorities to search the landfill site where it's buried. I have no intention of giving up.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
On Friday, I missed a subway train because a woman suddenly stopped on the stairs right in front of me to look at something on her smartphone. The woman was completely unaware of the people behind her. This irritating situation reminded me of recent above-ground encounters. These days, it seems, I often have to avoid colliding with people who are distracted by their phones. In New York, it feels as though we've crossed the line in the last few months. Smartphones have been everywhere for years, of course, but lately there seems to have been a shift in social norms associated with their use. In the past, we were more cautious about not bumping into other people when we used our phone. But nowadays, the unwritten rule is as follows. If what I'm reading or watching on my phone is interesting to me, you are supposed to get out of my way, just as if I were a lamppost. The consequences of distracted walking are more serious than simply causing annoyance. According to research published earlier this year, injuries requiring emergency room treatment arising from mobile phone distraction have shot up in the USA. Some people have walked off bridges or into moving traffic. One man on holiday in a national park was so busy texting that he almost walked into a bear, and in Indiana, a woman walked straight into an icy river. And so I'd like to invite you to join me in a simple, non-aggressive act of resistance, one that is designed to restore safely to our streets. The next time you find yourself on a collision course with a careless phone user, don't give way. Stand your ground and see what happens. I'm not suggesting that you deliberately walk into the path of a distracted walker. And just to be clear, you should still step aside if they get too close. We're trying to prevent accidents here, not cause them. But based on my own experiments so far, they'll never get that close. Distracted walkers are aware of their surroundings, after all. They will eventually look up, steer themselves around you, and walk on. Hopefully their awareness will be raised and they will pay more attention next time.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
On Friday, I missed a subway train because a woman suddenly stopped on the stairs right in front of me to look at something on her smartphone. The woman was completely unaware of the people behind her. This irritating situation reminded me of recent above-ground encounters. These days, it seems, I often have to avoid colliding with people who are distracted by their phones. In New York, it feels as though we've crossed the line in the last few months. Smartphones have been everywhere for years, of course, but lately there seems to have been a shift in social norms associated with their use. In the past, we were more cautious about not bumping into other people when we used our phone. But nowadays, the unwritten rule is as follows. If what I'm reading or watching on my phone is interesting to me, you are supposed to get out of my way, just as if I were a lamppost. The consequences of distracted walking are more serious than simply causing annoyance. According to research published earlier this year, injuries requiring emergency room treatment arising from mobile phone distraction have shot up in the USA. Some people have walked off bridges or into moving traffic. One man on holiday in a national park was so busy texting that he almost walked into a bear, and in Indiana, a woman walked straight into an icy river. And so I'd like to invite you to join me in a simple, non-aggressive act of resistance, one that is designed to restore safely to our streets. The next time you find yourself on a collision course with a careless phone user, don't give way. Stand your ground and see what happens. I'm not suggesting that you deliberately walk into the path of a distracted walker. And just to be clear, you should still step aside if they get too close. We're trying to prevent accidents here, not cause them. But based on my own experiments so far, they'll never get that close. Distracted walkers are aware of their surroundings, after all. They will eventually look up, steer themselves around you, and walk on. Hopefully their awareness will be raised, and they will pay more attention next time.
Czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.